I'd guarantee that people who are looking for something to switch up, like they're struggling mentally or whatever it is, getting out onto a trail and hiking by yourself in nature is gonna do wonders for you.
This is Fat Chats with the Lads.
With your boys Baz, Pricey and Liam.
Let's go.
I'm just trying to do something fun every day.
Never be afraid to go out and see the world.
If you're not into NFTs, you're missing out.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Today we're joined by Western Australia's very own wilderness adventurer. He's massed huge followings on his social media that allows viewers to follow in his journey on some extreme adventures across the world. He's built an entire community of like-minded hikers who can join him on some epic hikes across WA. From massive bike rides to walking pretty well the entire length of New Zealand in 2 months, this is Camp Bostock. Welcome, mate. How
Welcome,
you going?
Cam.
Yeah, good, boys.
How do you feel after that?
I feel good. Yeah. That was incredible.
Most guests do.
Yeah. Stoked to be here, guys. Thanks for having me.
No worries.
Thanks for coming on.
So just tell us a little about yourself. Where did you grow up and how did that all come about?
Yeah. I've been in Perth my entire life, essentially. Grew up here. Bloody love Western Australia.
Yeah.
Very proud to be a West Aussie.
Yeah.
How good is it over here, boys?
Love it.
Very
so good.
Love
it. West Unreal. Is the best.
West is best.
West is best, yeah.
Apparently.
Maybe we can just go back to the start of how, you know, early days on, you kind of started doing what you're doing now and had little glimpses for
the
things
sure.
you enjoy doing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I guess probably where my love for the outdoors started was actually when I was like 5 or 6, my family took us like around Australia in a bus, which was sick.
Oh, wow.
And it was pretty rough. Actually, I think our van, we named our bus, it was Rough Nuts. So
yeah, right.
And that was pretty much our lifestyle. Hey, like I was pretty young, so I don't remember a lot, but it was, camping in the bush, cooking damper on the fire, and just living off the land. And we spent like 13 months on the road, and I have such good memories of that. Wow. Fishing, hiking, exploring, that kind of thing. So
I was always jealous of the kids that got to go around Australia.
It was sick.
You
man.
Did it as well,
I
Liam,
did
didn't
well.
You?
For 5 months, a bit shorter. Yeah. But it was still pretty incredible.
Yeah, like literally homeschooled on the road. Like I was like in bloody preschool or something at that point. But yeah, it was sick. And obviously came back and continued that kind of trend with the fam, which was cool. I think as I kind of got into a teenager, I was a bit more into the video games and that kind of thing. So I kind of drifted away. Until my late teens where I kind of rediscovered my love for the outdoors and hiking specifically in the last few years. I've just been going for it. So yeah, it's been sick.
Yeah.
That's cool. Sick. What did school look like then? Was that here in the city areas of Perth?
Yeah, it was in Perth. Actually homeschooled for the entirety of my high schooling.
Really?
Which was wild. Yeah, I went to Ashdale Primary School, which was cool up in the northern suburbs. And then... Year 9 onwards, homeschooled with a group of other kids, a lot of family members, like my cousins, brother and sister, and a few like family friends. So we had a little like homeschooling group, which was cool. Like we had some socialization still, was sick, and did a bunch of, you know, other activities apart from the curriculum. Graduated year 12 homeschooling, which was cool.
Awesome. How do exams at the end of year 12 look like then? What's the process?
There's not kind of the same exam system. So I didn't, do what you'd do at regular school. So I like couldn't qualify for university or anything when I left. I don't remember the exact, curriculum, but it was a bit different. So if I wanted to go to uni, I'd have to have done some sort of bridging course exam thing.
Oh, sick.
It was pretty chill actually. Homeschooling's.
Yeah. Enjoyed it.
It's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, parents, my teacher. Mum was super chill, so it just slacked off a lot.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it was a good time. Probably like slacked off to play video games a bit too much. But
right. What was your favorite video game?
I played a lot of PC games over my teenage years. Counter-Strike.
Oh, CSGO. Yeah.
Team Fortress.
TF2?
TF2, a lot of TF2.
You're into that, aren't you?
Yeah. I had way too many hours, hey. Like I ended up realizing that I was spending way too much time on video games and just sold my computer when I like turned 18.
Makes sense.
Get it away from me. it was a good choice, eh? Like I was playing too much games.
Yeah.
And that's sort of when I switched gear and
got
a bit more into the outdoors.
Oh, very cool.
Did you have glimpses of that outdoor passion throughout high school? Or were you kind of neglected it a bit?
Yeah, I think like we do, like in the homeschooling community we had, we do a bunch of outdoor stuff. I remember doing a couple of days in the Bibbulmun track as like a 16-year-old with like our youth group at church. And so like I did enjoy those things, but probably didn't quite have the passion for it until I ditched the games and kind of got more into the outdoors more intentionally. Like, I had my own license and, you know, was an actual adult and I could make my own choices, that kind of thing. And I bloody fell in love with just being on the trails and all that comes with that.
Yeah, what was the plan after school?
Yeah, I didn't really have much of a plan. I really had a passion, even as a young person myself, for sort of like making an impact on the next generation. So like people younger than me. So I studied youth work. I also studied ministry at Bible College. So I did a year of both of those things. And then I went into work in youth work, in social work, which was sick. And absolutely frothed that day. Like, it was so good. Like, man, making an impact. I was mostly working one-on-one with youth at risk and did that for like 4 or 5 years straight out of homeschooling. And that was sick. And I still have that passion, for reaching young people, which I'm able to do through my content now, which is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what were those steps then? Like, you hit 18 and then you went into doing these couple of years, and then when did you kind of realize that maybe this is something I want to take a bit further in reaching more people and utilizing your video skills that you'd kind of built up?
Yeah. It was more like a hobby for a long time. Hey, like, I just loved hiking, so I'd get outside. And it wasn't for a couple of years, maybe when I was like 20 or 21, where I started to like just film it just for a bit of fun. Like, you see other people post stuff online. I'm like, yeah, that looks cool. Like, I'll share what I'm doing. And so just like random adventures around Perth, started filming it. Super amateur level, like super cringe looking back on those first
videos. No, we did that all the time.
We look back last year and we're like, oh.
Every creator has the same story.
Yeah, well, it means you've actually gone somewhere.
So
was TikTok around then?
Nah, there was no TikTok. I think I just posted a few things to like YouTube. Like,
I think Instagram was like...
Yeah, like a thing. Like photos on YouTube. Yeah. I mean, photos on Instagram. Yeah, like iPhone 5 or whatever. Just some random shots of trees and stuff. Just like all shocking content. But I just like really enjoyed it. So just like learning more about content creation and realized that, I could kind of make that impact online in a bigger scale than I could, in everyday life, which I was really keen for. And I'm like real passionate now about getting people into the outdoors. And so I think over those first few years, I realized that getting outside is just so good for you. Like, for me, just, so much peace in the outdoors. It's where you're meant to be. It's so good for you physically, for you mentally. And I wanted to just share that as many people as possible. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's kind of been the goal of my content. And
I think you've taken getting outdoors to a bit of an extreme in terms of some of the things you've done, but
yeah, for sure.
Talk us a little bit how that process was to kind of making it your full-time work over the few years that you did after youth work. Mm. What did those first years kind of look like? Did you do part-time work or were you kind of just...
Yeah. I was a full-time social worker for like 4 or 5 years. And like I said, just kind of created content on the side just for fun. My wife and I actually ended up moving to Tokyo, like 4 years ago. She's always wanted to study over there, so we made a big move and went over, and I was working over there with young people, which was sick. And then COVID hit, so this was early 2020 when that happened. COVID hit, we were forced to come home. Crazy times. I mean, everyone has a story of that. Screwed up their plans. Like, we were planning to be there for a few more years, and ended up coming home, didn't have a job and all that kind of stuff. And that's when I kind of jumped into, well, maybe I can do this full time. Is that a possibility? And I just said, screw it. I'm back in Perth. I'm not going to get another job for a while. I'll give it a go. And somehow it worked. Haven't looked back since.
Yeah. Was there a particular like brand deal or something that you realized that it was possible?
I don't think I made money for like a whole year or 18 months after I decided that I was going to give it a go. But I guess just having all that time dedicated to doing it, whereas before I had a full-time job and it was kind of just a hobby on the side, I had all this time to put out content, started growing, and I'm like, man, people actually like care about what I'm putting out. I'm actually reaching people and, just following other people online who were doing it full-time and doing brand deals and that kind of thing. I'm like, geez, if I like stick at it and work really hard, I reckon I could get somewhere with it. Mm-hmm. And so, it's just kind of, just motivated by the progress I was making and the people around me who I saw who were really successful. I was like, I'm just going to go all in basically. And obviously worked like my ass off more hours than a regular full-time job, as you boys probably know. Like, there's a lot of hours that go into putting out content behind the scenes. And it's just, yeah, grown year on year for the last 2 or 3 years, which has been just a crazy journey.
That is really cool. Yeah. Go back to Tokyo maybe. How long were you guys there? Or initially, how did you even meet your wife? And how was that kind of process of moving to Tokyo?
Yeah. Met my wife homeschooling, actually. Our parents knew each other when they were like teenagers. And they had disconnected and not talked to each other for like 20 years. And just somehow reconnected. I'm not even sure how. When I was about 15. And Karis, my wife, her mom decided to put her homeschooling as well, and she kind of joined our little crew of homeschooling people in the northern suburbs of Perth. We had like 20 of us at one point. And yeah, I guess that's how we met or re-met. I think we actually like met when we were babies at one point. Like,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow, 20 cool. years, 15 years prior or something, which is kind of a crazy story.
Yeah.
And reconnecting, and we basically started dating when we were like 15. If you can call it dating, and locked her up a few years later, and married for about 7 years now, which is crazy to look back on. Karis has always been super into Japanese culture, big anime fan. Growing up, loved the language, and it was always a dream of hers to go over to move to Tokyo and study in university, study the language. So we said, why not? Let's do it.
And you did it.
Yeah. We did it. And we're there for about a year. Yeah. She went over a bit before I did. So she was there for about 13 months, I think. And I was there for about 8 months.
Cool.
Total.
Where were you staying? In Tokyo?
Like West Tokyo near Tachikawa. I don't know if you know that area. But yeah, it was kind of near the mountains and the Alps, like kind of west of Tokyo, which was cool because I was able to get out and explore.
Yeah, you did a few hikes over there.
Did a bunch of hiking, which I think really just leveled up my passion for the outdoors because it's so incredible over there. I don't know if you guys have been out.
I'm actually just realized I'm the only one that hasn't been.
Lame.
Only one here.
That's cool.
Tough.
That's
good. What a loser.
Anyway, was it good?
It's an epic place.
Nice place.
It's beautiful.
The culture, the people, everyone's so nice.
Apparently the food as well.
Food's incredible. Like Tokyo City is just whole another world, like coming from Perth, which is like a pretty big city, but you go to Tokyo.
Apparently it feels like the future.
Shinjuku Station.
Shinjuku Station is just another planet. It's crazy. Wild. Like there's more people living in Tokyo Prefecture than the entirety of Australia, which is just...
I saw a stat as well. 3.5 million people go through Shinjuku Station every day, which is more than the population of Perth. This one station, more people tag in and actually scan through it.
Was there a lot of people when you were there?
Oh, mate.
It's just a nightmare.
Yeah. Me and Caitlin got lost for half an hour just trying to get out of Shinjuku the first time we rocked up.
Really?
Yeah, I've been there.
It was crazy.
Ridiculous, dude. Like riding the trains there, like at peak hour as well, when everyone's going to work.
Yeah.
And the train conductors are literally just like
pushing people in.
Pushing
we saw that.
And
people
just like the doors closed.
Oh, my God.
There's so many people. It's unreal. But the city's sick, food's good, and then there's just mountains everywhere. Like 80% of the landmass of Japan is just mountainous. Like it's just
really
ridiculously beautiful. So
did
a bit of exploring.
So good to do hikes.
So many hikes, and I was making videos there just like while working and frothed it. We had to move home, unfortunately.
Led to a new
chapter. I mean, looking back, like all the stress that came with COVID and all this messing us around was a blessing in disguise because I wouldn't have gone full time by my own choice. It was kind of that I was forced into it, that I was like, let's just give it a go while I have this opportunity. So
that's really cool.
I think most people can say that about COVID, which is kind of nice.
You hear it all the time.
Other creators and that.
Especially creators. You're forced to get things done that you wouldn't normally have time or prioritize.
I've heard it a lot.
So sick.
As crazy of a time as it was.
Yeah.
Still, I mean, it's kind of on the tail end of it now. But
I think so,
It's a blessing in some ways as well, for sure.
Well, let's jump into the last maybe few years then, to where you were talking about you giving this a red hot crack and trying to have more impact through the online community. What was the initial starting point of where that started?
Yeah, I guess the starting point was when I go back from Japan and came back to Perth, and I was planning to take it more seriously and figure out how I could make a living off it. The biggest thing I really wanted to do was just build a community around what I was doing, try and impact individuals as much as possible. You know, like there's thousands of people that are online looking at what I do, but I really wanted to make an impact on an individual level and inspire people to get outside. Mainly that was the goal, and experience all the benefits that come with that. So yeah, I was just like brainstorming and seeing what worked and testing things. And when short form video came along over the last couple of years, I jumped on that, and it's been been really successful, you know, posting on TikTok and that, which has been sick. And yeah, just like started creating community around what I did. So like jumped on Patreon as a way to monetize what I was doing, yeah, but also build community at the same time. And that's just consistently grown over the last couple of years, which has been awesome. And I run a trail club here in Perth, which is like completely free. So I get people out into the trails every couple of weeks. Just trying to get people outside and experience their own backyard. There's so many people in Perth that haven't even walked a trail or don't go outside very often at all. And I think that's a big reason for like the mental health pandemic that we're experiencing. You know, people just stuck inside looking at screens all day. It's just not what we were meant to do as humans, I don't think.
Yeah,
I think being grounded in the natural world, whether it's at the beach or in the hills, on the trails, whatever it is, it does wonders for your mental health, physical health, everything.
Definitely.
Yeah.
What was the transition then going into earning some money from this and trying to, you know, make a bit of a living from it if you were transitioning slowly from the jobs that you had previously?
Yeah, well, that's it. I didn't earn money for about a year and a half. And so I was broke.
Yeah.
I was like, crap.
We've all been through that.
Crap, I've got to make money off this somehow. I'm going to have to go get a job again. And I said to myself after about a year and things were going well, I was like, I'm never going to work for anyone ever again. And so that was just my mindset. I was like, that's not happening. So let's just find a way to make this work. And I guess as my following grew, I was just trying to explore different revenue streams. Mm. You guys don't know, as creators, like you got to kind of have multiple streams of revenue coming in to sort of build any sort of consistency, because it can be, you know, you can make a lot of money one month if you get a big brand deal and then nothing for a couple months. And it's hard to budget, it's hard to plan long term with that kind of income. So yeah, Patreon was one big income stream that's like very consistent. And then just starting to work with brands over the last couple of years as my following's grown, and trying to work with brands that align with my mission and getting outdoors, and that's been really good as well. Been able to work with some really cool brands doing different campaigns and sponsored posts and things like that. Doing YouTube, which has been quite successful as well. I don't have the biggest channel, but a bit of income through that. So got all these sources now that have grown over the last couple of years, and finally like
all adds up.
Comfortable doing this without having to stress, which is really cool.
That is cool. Your own boss.
Own boss, and hopefully just going to continue trending upwards. Hey?
Yeah.
But buddy journey to get here. A lot of hours, a lot of bank, a lot of hard work.
People don't see.
Zero. A lot of hard work.
Yeah.
All part of it, though.
It's all part of it, man. And like, wouldn't have any other way, right? Like, you learn from every stressful situation, every hard moment, and gotta have a bit of a hustle mindset to get through it as well.
Absolutely.
Which I enjoy.
So. Can you dive into Patreon a little bit? Because I know as a content creator, I don't actually know much, like a whole lot about it.
Yeah.
How did you go into that and another source of income and kind of monetizing it?
Yeah, Patreon's, it's like a membership platform for creators essentially. So you can offer perks that can be anything really, and your followers can pay a monthly fee to sort of access those perks and support you, which is sick. So like I have my community where I host group trips through my Patreon, and I have like a private Patreon Instagram which I post like, you know, stories all day every day of just like life as a creator, hikes I'm doing, that kind of thing. So a bunch of perks, you know, there's multiple tiers of support that people can choose to support you at. And it's just such a good way to build like a tight-knit community as well. I think every creator should give it a crack if they're looking for some sort of consistent income, because it's community building, it's consistent income, it's like ticks all the boxes that you really need as a creator. And I've just met the coolest people as well on my hikes. Like I just chatted to you guys before, just came back from a trip we did down south, best crew, couple of days on the trail, is getting people outside that usually wouldn't do an overnight hike, or maybe it's their first one, and doing it like a group setting with a guide and whatnot is takes a bit of the like the walls away for people that that wouldn't usually do it. So it's a win-win-win on Patreon. I love it. Hey?
Yeah, that's cool.
So it's something that I really commit a lot of time to now, just for the community aspect as well as the financial.
Yeah. Wow. That's so cool. Yeah.
How do you balance all those different social platforms then? If you're, you know, doing stuff for Patreon, you're making YouTube videos, Instagram, Reels, you're sharing stuff consistently. Was that like time management and organization skills, something you learned previously or something you really had to grapple with?
I'm like, terrible with time management.
So am I.
It's hard, man. Yeah. Like I just wing it for the most part. But I mean, the good thing about having multiple platforms is you can repurpose content across all those platforms.
Mm-hmm.
So generally for the Patreon content, it'll be everything I film, but live as I do it. Okay. And then a lot of that will be repurposed into Reels and TikToks at later dates. So a lot of the hikes and big trips I do, that's kind of the format I go by.
Mm-hmm.
So the Patreon community kind of gets everything as it happens really raw. And then I use that same content and edit into more short form digestible stuff for the masses, a bit delayed or whatever. But it is hard, like, yeah, trying to produce content from all these different platforms. But I guess that's just part of being a creator. The hardest part for me is because I really love posting long form stuff on YouTube, but the successful stuff is all the short form. It's like trying to film everything in landscape and portrait. It's just that's a lot of work, especially like out on a hike. If I'm trying to film for both, I'm just like talking to the camera in landscape, then flip talking in portrait. Every shot of, you know, the landscape I'm looking at is going to be filmed both ways. So that adds a lot to the process for sure. And then editing for both as well. But you know, that's part of it.
Seem to have it down pretty pat.
We were all talking on the way home just how incredible you are at consistently posting while hiking. I don't know, how many kilometers a day would you normally do on a hike?
On like a long distance hike, like anywhere from 20 to 50 kilometers a day.
Yeah, and you must be just absolutely knackered while you're filming as well, and then content still pops up that night as you're going along.
Yeah, man. Yep. Yeah, like I just come back from New Zealand doing a huge hike and...
Yeah, we'll get into it.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's tough, man. Like I'm hiking for sometimes like 16 hours in a day. And I'm trying to post like daily reels. So it's hard, but I do like usually have a bit of delay between like the post going up and the day that it happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. But most of the time it's like just got to suck it up once I set up the tent for the night, just sitting in my tent, get onto my phone, start editing the clips for the day. I really try and be really organized with all my footage, like even if it's just on my phone. Organizing everything into folders day by day, you know, different, whether it's pictures, videos, that kind of thing, where it's landscape, portrait. And once it's all organized, then I will be able to edit. And I've got like a process, I guess. So it's pretty streamlined, especially on a hike like Te Aroha in New Zealand, where it was like 7 days long. By the end of it, I was able to like pump out a reel within like 30 minutes just because I got that process down and everything kind of sorted. But yeah, that's a whole other dynamic to being out in the wild for sure.
Let's dive into that then if you want.
Yeah, New Zealand.
New Zealand trip.
Yeah, how do you say it? Te Aroha.
Te Aroha.
Te Aroha. Well,
it's got a little tongue roll in it.
Yeah, the R's got to roll the R's. Te Aroha. It's really hard.
Yeah. So tell us about that trip. Like, how long is the walk? How long, the planning? How many kilometers is it? Like, how did you get into that? And what was your thought process planning that?
Bloody long hike. The last couple of years I've been really interested in like through hikes, so just super long distance hikes. There's some really famous ones around the world. We have the Bibbulmun Track here in Western Australia, which is 1,000 kilometers long, which I did in 2021. Frothed it. It was the best thing I'd ever done. Spent just like weeks out on the trail. And I'd always heard people talk about Te Aroha in New Zealand, which is, it's considered to be the hardest through hike in the world, which is pretty crazy. And it's, 3,000 kilometers long. It starts at Cape Ringa on the northern tip of the North Island, finishes on the southern tip of the South Island and Bluff. So it literally traverses the entire country. And for those who've been to New Zealand, it's bloody beautiful the whole way along. Just an epic hike. So I've been wanting to do it for yonks. Finally made it happen. yeah, first half of 2023, which was sick.
Yeah.
And yeah, literally just got back, which is crazy, but epic adventure.
What 70 was, days.
Yeah. What was kind of the process or planning that you had to go through to get you over there and get the sponsors on board and gear and everything like that?
Yeah, a lot of logistics go into these long hikes because obviously you're just, well, for me, I was there alone. A lot of people hike with others, but sorting out food and where you're going to sleep and how far you're going to walk each and every day for months on end is just like a big task. I tend to like wing it a bit, so I would plan like my next week out and take it day by day from there. But yeah, there was a lot that went into it before I left, like a few months of a lot of research, watching other people's videos that had done it, and then chasing up sponsors to hopefully help fund the trip. It's actually surprisingly expensive doing these long hikes. Before, like after you pay for flights and food every day, which can cost a lot because a lot of the time you're eating like dehydrated meals and pre-made meals and stuff, and then like track fees and hut fees and campsite fees and transport.
All adds up.
There's a lot of costs, yeah. So I was lucky enough to get a bunch of sponsors on board for the trip, which was sick, kind of funded the trip, which was awesome. And I had a few New Zealand sponsors, which was really ideal because they were at the spot where I was hiking, and so I had like close communications with them. Like I had a food sponsor that was New Zealand based, and they were able to like send food out to me along the track and that kind of thing, which was cool.
Yeah, that's handy.
But yeah, a lot of planning, hey, like leading up to the day I left, I was just like on my computer, like had spreadsheets and all these different things to make sure I kind of prepared for anything, because it's a long way.
Yeah.
It's a long bloody way.
Talk us through a bit about your mindset at the start of that trip. Is it, you just, as you said, you were going to wing it, but what were you looking for mentally? Did you know it was going to be quite draining, and what ended up actually happening to your mental state or your physical state, and were there injuries or...
Yeah. I was so excited for it. Hey, like I knew it was going to be the hardest thing I'd ever done, but just pumped to get out into nature. Like I've always been the biggest introvert, and being out in the bush by myself is just my favorite thing in the world. Mm. So doing that for months on end, I was like, hell yeah, this is going to be sick.
Don't have to talk to anyone. Everyone leave me alone.
Yeah. There's a lot of other people on the trail actually. So, definitely had a few good chats, but like if I was at a campsite and there was heaps of people, I'd usually just go find a spot in the bush and set up my tent.
Nice.
But yeah, it was a lot harder than I was expecting actually. Super challenging terrain, and definitely had some moments there I was like, crap, this is brutal. Some really hard days, and had a few injuries as well along the trek, which is inevitable hiking that far for sure. But I consider myself to be pretty fit and hiking fit, so that was a big setback. And slowed me down a lot as well.
Was there much training involved for it?
Yeah, I did a lot of specific training for sure, but I hike so much that I'm just fit for hikes a lot of the time anyway. But yeah, I spend a lot of the time in the gym, squatting and calf raises, that kind of thing. Yeah. Like sitting on the stair stepper for hours on end.
Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah, for sure. Whoa. Yeah, just getting the hike.
That makes sense.
Just getting the legs ready for just long days because... You know, walking for 12 hours straight across mountains, you just want that, basically that longevity in the legs. Don't have to be super strong, they just have to be able to withstand like going for ages and ages and ages. But yeah, that was my issue. I think I had a few like ligament and tendon injuries, which they weren't quite strong enough for the demands of the New Zealand backcountry. It was just wild country.
Talk us a little bit also, this is just a random question, but you were walking through a lot of streams and stuff like that. So how did it go with like wet shoes and wet socks? I mean, that's Liam's worst nightmare is having wet socks and dirty feet. So how did you run with that?
Yeah, I had wet shoes and socks and feet for weeks at a time.
Nice.
It's not comfy.
What's it? Is it trench foot? Is that what you can get?
You can definitely get trench foot. Yeah. So I'd have to make sure I'd dry my feet out at night. So once I was done hiking. But there was so many stream crossings and river crossings on the trail. It's notorious for that.
Cold water as well, I'd imagine.
Freezing cold, yeah. Like I would walk through snow-capped mountains, and then the next day the snow would melt and all the rivers were just literal ice.
Dang.
I'd have to like walk through them.
Could you drink the water there?
Yeah, for sure. So that was cool. I loved like just drinking out of a stream and stuff.
Yeah, that's cool.
But yeah, wet feet all the time. It was just inevitable. Like some days you'd cross a river 50 times. It's like,
oh, the same one.
Some people would ask, like, why don't you just take your shoes off while you cross? And when you're doing it 50 times in a day, it's just not really.
You just get used to it.
You just trudge through.
Yeah.
You're going to be wet kind of thing.
Wow.
Just, you know, made sure I had shoes that drained water pretty well. And
yeah.
Could hopefully dry them out if the sun came out. But like I said, there were periods of weeks that there was just rain all day and river crossings all day. And it's you're just going to be wet, and it's just how it is.
Do you have any gnarly stories? Because I remember seeing, there a blizzard? A blizzard?
Yeah.
A blizzard.
Blizzard.
We had a blizzard.
Well, that's how it's spelled. Well, we don't have blizzards in Perth.
Yeah, nowhere near, do we?
Blizzard, yeah.
Yeah, some crazy stories. Hey, like one, I think the day you were talking about was, it was on this notoriously like hectic pass called Waiau Pass towards the north of the South Island.
Mm.
I think it's actually considered the hardest like day on the track of the whole 3,000 kilometers. And yeah, it was a bloody blizzard the day I did it.
Oh.
It was mental. Like, yeah, I had a forecast leading up to that day of snow. And I was like, everyone I talked to was like, you really shouldn't go up there in the snow. Like, it's hectic enough as it is. And so I made it to this camping hut that was like sort of at the base of the pass. And I met this other hiker there. And he had already been waiting for 2 days for the snow to kind of melt and pass. And he was like, I'm going up no matter what. No matter what tomorrow. And I was like, all right, I'll come with, even though the forecast was still pretty bad. But because like we kind of had each other, we're a little bit more confident that it would be all right.
Yeah.
But you woke up the next morning and there was like a foot of snow on the ground.
Oh.
And you could see the pass in the distance, and it was just like hectic looking. Like, it's like a 2,000 meter peak and just snowing like crazy. And coming from WA, like, I've barely seen snow in my life.
Yeah, true.
I was frothing. It was so beautiful.
Yeah.
But we headed off. Like, both of us didn't really have enough food to wait out the weather. So that was one of the reasons we left and went for it. Because if we're like in the middle of nowhere. It's like days either direction to walk out to a road.
Yeah.
So we just went for it. And bloody craziest day of my life hiking. Like, it took us like 4 hours to make it up to the pass itself. And just like trudging, you know, knee deep through snow that whole way, like just a hectic,
rugged
mountainside. And we didn't follow the trail because you couldn't see the trail at all. So we're like rock climbing up the side of this thing. I've got some wild footage of it. It's ridiculous. So we made it to the pass, which we're stoked about. But then it just got worse on the descent the other side. Like, that's when the blizzard started, and it was like just ridiculously high winds that were just like ice cold. Neither of us had like snow gear. It was just regular hiking gear. So I was like wearing my rain jacket and my t-shirt, wearing my hat, this exact hat actually, my Nike cap.
Shout out Nike.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Sponsorship.
Yeah. So like, if we stop moving, we'll
freeze.
Like, you'd die.
Were you worried at all?
I was worried, man.
Did you ever feel unsafe?
Felt really unsafe that day. Like, you break your leg or something up there, you're
screwed
out, basically.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so yeah, climbing down was more hectic than climbing up. Couldn't see the trail at all.
Wow.
Just like fanging it down the side of this mountain in like waist deep snow at times, full on blizzard hitting you on the side of the head, you can't see anything.
So were your shoes and that soaked like with snow?
Shoes were soaked.
Freezing?
Yeah. You'd be numb,
yeah,
surely.
I couldn't feel my toes. Like, I was probably close to frostbite.
Yeah,
like,
I was going to say.
I was out there for too much longer. It was stupid, basically. Yeah. We shouldn't have done it.
Yeah. But you did anyway.
And we did it, and it made for a good story. And I was trying to film content the whole time. Like, I've got to capture this. I can't finish the day and not have any footage.
Yeah.
So we were filming, and I think it took us about 9 hours to get over the pass, which was only like 10 kilometers. So like a kilometer an hour.
It's
just super slow. We made it down to the camping hut on the other side of the mountain.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it was the craziest day of hiking. It was the most beautiful day of hiking of my life as well, though. So it's it's a good memory.
Contrast.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long do you reckon you would have had to stand still for before you actually maybe like died on the top of that pass?
It was probably like negative 20 degrees up there, maybe colder. Oh. So like
a couple hours, you would have just been.
Yeah, you'd be done pretty quickly. Like, if we stopped at any point, we would just break into a crazy shiver. Like, we had to keep moving to keep warm. I don't recommend anyone do this, by the way.
Yeah. If you're listening.
Yeah, if you're listening. Wow. Disclaimer, don't do this. I got a lot of comments like after I posted that.
Well, that's what I remember seeing.
Yeah.
Yeah, people were saying, talking about it. And
yeah, because people die, man, like out in the backcountry.
Absolutely.
And yeah, it was a poor decision.
Well, isn't it Mount Everest is like the highest graveyard because they can't bring people back down?
Yeah.
Well, you're literally walking it and you see people on the side of the road just perfectly preserved because it's ice cold and they're it's a graveyard as you go.
Yeah. Nepal's like a whole other day's stay over there.
Is that something you might potentially do? Any international stuff?
Yeah, going to Nepal this year.
Actually. Oh, are you really?
Yeah. Oh, hang on, heard it here first on Fat Chats.
I haven't said that publicly. Trip's not booked, but
all right, well, let us know if you want to take that.
It's gonna happen. No, wow. I'm super keen. Yeah, I won't do Everest, but.
Oh, okay.
We've got Everest Base Camp and
yeah.
Hopefully do another mountain called Amadablam, which is another big boy.
Mm. Wow.
Is Everest on the bucket list at some point?
I think so. I'd like to. I did Mount Kilimanjaro in January this year, which is the tallest mountain in Africa.
Yep.
And it's one of the seven summits. The seven summits, tallest mountain on every continent. It's kind of like a bucket list thing for hikers or mountaineers.
I could imagine. Yeah.
And obviously Everest is the biggest in Asia, so... It's on the list now after doing Kili. I didn't really think I'd want to do that at one point. I really like long distance hiking, but now I'm like, I could climb some mountains for sure.
We don't have much here in Perth, so you're going to have to go somewhere else. Yeah,
what's the highest in WA? Like 1,000?
The Perth Hills.
100?
Climb up to Mundaring to do the trek.
There's nothing here, hey? So go abroad to climb some big mountains, I think.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Because when we're in Hawaii, all the Hawaiians are like, oh, do you get cliffs like this in Perth? I'm like, nah.
It's flat.
It's as flat as it could ever be.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
It's literally one beach from Joondalup down to South Beach, Frio.
Yeah.
It's no cliffs, there's nothing. It's just like one bit of sea.
Yeah. And when you drive the Nullarbor, you soon realise how flat Australia is.
Yeah. Literally.
We've got the best coastline in the world.
Oh, I definitely.
Yeah, the rest of it's just flat. Yeah. Especially everywhere.
Not good for a hiker.
No. No idea. Yeah, we've got some cool trails, just no mountain trails.
Yeah.
And so you were filming every day and putting all this content together. Tell us a bit about how some of those videos blew up and reached a pretty large audience online.
Yeah, so in all the long distance hikes I do, I try and sort of do like a daily vlog basically on Reels. And people just get invested and want to watch the whole thing, which is really cool. So that's why I do kind of just a short recap each day and kind of draw it out over the whole hike. So going into doing Te Aroha, that was always the plan, kind of short, 60-second daily vlogs of a quick recap of each day. And I posted the first episode and just blew up, which was insane. I think it got like 4.5 million views on Instagram. And when people catch the first episode and it gets a lot of hype and that kind of thing, they're like kind of committed and they want to watch the whole thing.
Well, they must want to watch your whole journey.
That's right. Yeah. So cool. Having episode one blow up is like the dream.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah. Handy.
And so it was crazy growth on Instagram. Like, I gained like 150,000 followers in like a week.
Wow.
And from then on, just everyone would froth every episode that popped out. So I was like, I was on the grind from then. I'm like, okay, I gotta keep every single day.
Yeah.
And
dang.
Hundreds of thousands of people would watch every episode, which was wild. Like, that's so much cool. Love. And like, so many Kiwis jumped on board to follow the journey, and I got so much support from the locals. Like, I'd walk through a town or a city and just people on the street would stop and say, I've been following your journey. And
that's really cool.
You can stay at my house tonight if you want, or they'll give me like food and that kind of thing. And I'd get that like every day. It was awesome.
Did you stay at their house sometimes?
Yeah. I stayed at quite a few people's houses that, it would just mess me on Instagram and say like, I see you're going to come through so-and-so town. I live here if you need a spot.
Oh, that's so cool. That's just the power of social media, isn't it?
Yeah, it's incredible, man. Like, it was like a cheat code for me because every other hiker on the trail.
camping and
in the middle of the rain.
They all probably started social media pretty quick after that.
Yeah, I'd get put up in people's homes. They'd cook me a feed and that kind of thing all the time. It was sick, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
It was awesome. I probably could have stayed in someone's house every night of like the 70 days if I wanted to. But I thought I'd better sleep on the trail sometimes.
Yeah.
For the content.
For the content.
Don't put that part in.
Did you actually film at people's houses?
Yeah, a little bit. Okay. Usually if I was there, I'd want to be present. Just to chat with them and not post too much about their life.
But,
No, it was good. Like, so much love, hey. It was good. And from all over the world as well on social media.
Mm.
Really positive response.
Really cool.
Yeah, wow.
So the idea is just to continue to grow that then, I guess, to be able to reach more people. Were you thinking about that as you were going, you know? The reason I'm keeping doing this is to grow the community even more and more.
100%, man. I mean, that's the only reason I post. It's basically inspire people to get outside. And, you know, I've got thousands of messages of people from people who said that they were inspired by this and they're planning their first hike or their first camping trip. And, you know, that's just the dream, man, like getting people outside. So, yeah, it's going to keep doing that for sure. Hopefully just hike longer trails and bigger trails all around the world. There's a lot of, you know, massive through hikes I'd like to do, so big things ahead for sure.
Very exciting. Any like dream collaborations or brands that you feel you could work with to have more of an impact, I guess, in that world?
Yeah, I mean, there's some huge global hiking brands, right? Like North Face and those kind of brands, which would be sick. There's one brand, local Cedar Summit, which is started in Perth, which is sick. So I've been doing some work with them, which is a dream coming true because just working with a local brand that makes sick products is epic. So hopefully we can continue collaborating. But yeah, as I kind of venture out more globally over the next few years, which is the plan, hopefully do some big collabs for sure.
Would you ever want to go into TV? Would that ever be a dream? I feel like it'd be a really
Bear
cool
Grylls
documentary. Yeah.
Bear Grylls. Of hiking. Bear Grylls
of hiking. I don't know. Hey, maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see.
So much possibility.
I'd love to produce some really cool episodic content.
Some films and stuff docos.
For sure.
Really high production kind of stuff.
I think so, And I've got a few mates who are really into that as well. And so, we've definitely talked about that, which would be sick. Just doing the craziest adventures around the world and kind of turning that into some sort of series. So, maybe one day.
Yeah.
Who knows what's on the horizon.
Very exciting. Wow.
Got to dream big, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's how you get there.
Yeah.
So on the horizon, there's just more trips coming up. And
tell us a little about what's coming up for you.
Yeah, hopefully Nepal this year. That's kind of the big plan. It's about a 30-day expedition that I'm looking at with some mates. Cool. So that'll be wild. Go to a higher elevation than I've ever been, which would be cool.
How do you train for that? Is that
it's really hard to train for specifically the altitude. Living in Perth, living at sea level, because obviously, when you go 6,000 plus meters up, you're halving the oxygen available to you. So, you got to acclimatize to basically survive, which means kind of climbing up real slowly and that kind of thing. And if you live at altitude, it's a lot easier, but we live at sea level in Perth, so going over there, there's not much a whole lot I can do here. It'll just be about slowly kind of ascending, getting acclimatized. And because you're going so slow, physically it's not that challenging. Short days, pretty hard terrain I'm expecting, but the altitude is the biggest challenge for that kind of thing.
Mm. What about chambers, like oxygen chambers?
Yeah, I think that's
thing. You have masks and stuff?
Yeah, you definitely can do that. I think people sleep in those altitude chambers. So potentially could look into that.
Another collaboration.
Collab.
Yeah. Anyone out there?
Oxygen chambers out there.
Chambers.
Not many of those.
But I got some big plans for different hikes. I'd love to go over to the US next year and hike some of their through hikes. They got kind of the biggest, most famous through hikes in the world with Pacific Crest Trail and Appalachian Trail.
Wow.
4,000 kilometers plus.
Oh my god. It's even bigger than New Zealand.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the Pacific Crest starts in Mexico on the west coast and goes up California, Washington, and finishes on the Canadian border. So
the whole west coast.
The entire west coast. So that's probably one of the biggest and most famous through hikes in the world, and definitely top of my bucket list. So hopefully next year, PCT, and continue kind of doing the similar content that I've done previously, and hopefully reach a whole new audience in North America and experience a whole new world, really.
Wow, amazing.
But there's so many hikes in the world, hey,
You could always find
got
one.
Got a lot of plans. Yeah, a long list of places to go.
Do you write these down a list, or is it kind of
I've got a long list, man. Like all over Europe and Africa, Asia. North America.
I feel like you could get lost on hours online, yeah, just looking at hikes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just like seeing new ones all the time, and I've done so much research already, and there's just some crazy places out there. Like, you guys have done a bunch of travel. The world's just wild.
Yeah.
There's so much to see. And I think hiking is the best way to see the world, because you can get to places that you just can't with a car.
Sure. And you're also going so slow, you can see it all.
Yeah, you take it all in and you get into these just inaccessible places that are just in the middle of nowhere and often with not many people around, which is awesome. So
cool.
Yeah, came for some big adventures.
On these big adventures, just quickly, do you like to listen to music? Or
just about to ask that. That's all I was thinking about.
Really common question.
Yeah, it would be. I saw you put up like podcasts you were listening to. Like, how did you balance that? And what was your?
Yeah, I would say like about 50% of the time I have headphones in.
Yeah.
A lot of people are like, "Why are you just listening to nature? Like, why are you listening to music?"
There's only so much nature you can listen
to. But yeah, when you're hiking 12 hours a day for 70 days, you get bored. Basically.
Yeah.
So I listen to a lot of podcasts, audiobooks, that kind of thing. Because, you know, you can listen to a 3-hour conversation on a podcast and it makes time fly, especially in like, you know, some of the hike, it's not all glamorous. Like, a lot of the hike is walking on roads
a
dirt track or farmland and that kind of thing. And it's like, I'm not really engaged with my surroundings right now. So I just want to zone out and power through. So yeah, a lot of tunes, a lot of podcasts, that kind of thing, just trying to educate and educate myself while I'm out there and that kind of thing. But, you know, I obviously love having the headphones out as well. You know, when you're walking past a river or in the forest with the birds chirping, it's pretty surreal, kind of grounding yourself and immersing yourself in that.
Yeah.
I'd say about 50-50.
Sick.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
Very cool.
Well, if you were to give any advice to people wanting to get outdoors, what would you say to them?
Yeah, first of all, just get outdoors. I mean, because I think a lot of people need to hear that, that don't do it much, even if it's just down to your local park or the beach. Just getting outside is, I think it's the best thing you can do for your overall health. Hiking just takes that to another level, because you're going to physically challenge yourself and kind of explore areas and put yourself into challenging situations that's going to force you to grow.
Yeah.
And so obviously you want to start small with hiking specifically. Get out to your local trail, go for a walk around the park, and then hopefully, you know, start exploring and hopefully you enjoy it enough to be motivated to explore more and get out to some longer, some harder trails that are maybe a bit more remote.
Wow.
But you know, I'd guarantee that people who are looking for something to switch up, like they're struggling mentally or whatever it is, getting out to onto a trail and hiking by yourself in nature is gonna do wonders for you. So it's something that I really advocate for.
Yeah. Amazing.
Sick. Well, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank
super
you.
Super inspiring to hear.
My absolute pleasure, guys.
Yeah, being from a world that's not necessarily in the hiking world, it's pretty it's pretty motivating just to hear like what you've gone through and how you've kind of navigated that. So yeah, cheers for coming on. We appreciate you a heap.
And we love watching your videos all the time, mate.
We do. So
keep going with that.
Yeah, cheers.
Keep them up.
And by the way, where can we find you on social media? What's your journey?
Yeah, just my name, Cam Bostock, AmBostock. You can find me anywhere on that with that.
Yeah, YouTube, Instagram, make sure you join his TikTok. Patreon.
Follow along.
Come for a hike.
Yeah, if you want to hike with me, come join my Patreon.
Yeah, sick.
Best community on the internet. That's what I reckon.
Ooh. I can guarantee that.
Yeah, I don't know. The Fat Chats community
is pretty strong.
Top two.
Yeah. Oh, definitely not.
Oh, thanks, Cam, for that.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, Cam. Cheers, guys.
See ya.